Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. The National Hockey League, after a 113-day lockout that forced the cancellation of 625 games, apparently has resolved its differences between the owners and the players. But questions remain, and for some, hockey is more than a game. It's a business that supports more than just the owners and the players, but also the clients of Central Ohioan Fred Card, who was enjoying a girls' hockey game at the Easton Chiller this weekend.
I'm in the restaurant equipment business, and I'm glad for the restaurants to get back to work for the hockey games going on.
Coming up, we'll hear more about the deal and what remains of the season for those restaurants in Central Ohio. Joining us now to talk about public perception of the league in the wake of the shutout is Brian Owen. He's CEO of NRG Research Group, which recently did a poll of Canadians about their national sport. Welcome to the show, Brian Owen.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
So from your poll was done last month, it found that a majority, 58% of Canadians surveyed, don't care if the current player-owner hockey dispute reaches an agreement this season. Is this apathy a function of the shutout itself, or is it something bigger? Was I wrong to call it the national sport?
Well, there's no doubt that that hockey's is the national sport of Canada. But it's easier to understand the 58% in the context of the question, which was, when do you think this lockout will be resolved? And only about 15% of the people we talked to thought it would be resolved this year in time for a season. And 58% basically said, I don't care whether there's a season or not. But I think it's reflective of the fact that the hardcore hockey fan represents about 25% of the population, and then there's another 40% or so that are occasional fans, and then there's others that'll watch one or two games a year, I suppose. But I just think it reflects the feeling they had about the sort of an antipathy towards the negotiations that were going on between the Players Association and the NHL.
My guest is Brian Owen, CEO and chairman of NRG Research Group. His firm did a survey last month of Canadians to determine their support for the National Hockey League. If you have a question or comment for Brian, give us a call, 614-292-8513. The National Hockey League has resolved its differences between the owners and the players after 113 days of a lockout. That means the Blue Jackets go back, hit the ice again in the next few days. What do you think about that? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I read that you said your conclusion is that the fan base is a narrower segment. So you said it's closer to 25% as opposed to 100% of the population. And you just reiterated that. Do you think that that's fewer than maybe you would have than would have numbered even 5 years ago?
It's consistent with some work that we did previously. I wasn't surprised that the hardcore fan base was in that 25% range.
So it's been like that for a long time. We just have a different perception.
I think when we talk about Canada being hockey mad, we're talking about a segment of the population that truly are very, very avid fans and very, very close followers. And it's highly covered by the sports media in particular, and even the mainstream media. So it gets amplified.
One columnist compared the impasse with the NHL and its players to the politics going on in Washington, you know, a la the inability to find compromise anymore. Do you think the apathy is a reflection of that in any way that people just don't think these powerful entities can agree on anything anymore?
I think we're stretching quite a bit to take something as something like the sport of hockey and compare it to the major events that are going on in Washington. I suspect we're comparing apples and oranges there.
There was another issue of who the survey respondents were most angry with, the players or the owners, and more than a third, 35%, I guess, said all parties equally.
Yes.
There were no big bad guys, but 13% said they were most angry at NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman.
Yes.
Compared to 1% who felt the same about the players'
yep.
rep, Donald Fair.
Yeah. Gary Bettman is a bit of a, I mean, has traditionally been a lightning rod for attracting negative attention, in particular in certain Canadian markets. I don't know whether he has that same effect in U.S. markets.
And what is your expectation? What do you think the bounce back is going to be among fans? Do you think they're going to come right back, or are there going to be more empty seats? What's your feeling about that?
I think we have to think about, is it the fans that come out to games, which when you get right down to it is probably somewhere around 1 or 2% of the population that will see an NHL game during a year. I think the season ticket holder base will be fine. I think there's talk about demonstrations and maybe we should all stay away from the first game, or maybe we should be totally silent during the first period. But when you look at it, these are really short-term things, and they're expressions of the frustration that fans have felt watching the machinations of the owners and the players over the last, I think you said 111 days.
Mm-hmm. 113.
113.
Also with me in the studio, Aaron Portsline. He's a sports reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron Portsline, we're going to get to more of the details of the agreement in a few minutes. But just in general, what are you hearing from fans in Columbus about going back to the Nationwide Arena?
Well, early on, I'm hearing nothing but excitement from the hardcore fans, people who had waited, who were frustrated from the very start of this. I also think that this is a sort of a different market in and of itself right now because it is a depressed market. It's a market that finished 30th in the league last year.
Emotionally depressed.
Big time.
Okay.
They have chased fans out of the building by their play. So there wasn't great anticipation toward this season. If this were 2009 and 10, that season where they had just made the playoffs, where there was a sense that they were building toward something, there would be much more anger. But the hardcores are going to be there always. They have lost a lot of the fans that that tend to tune in around June when college football is over, the fans that maybe wait for them to win to jump on. They've lost them, and they have to now earn them back. Good luck with that. But there are the people out there who it's almost like they don't care what happened the last 113 days. They blame everybody or nobody. It doesn't matter. They're just happy to have hockey back.
You know, they talked about, we were just talking about 13% of the survey respondents from the NRG survey said they're most angry at NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman versus 1% who feel the same way about NHL Players Representative Donald Fair. Do people in Columbus know enough or pay that close attention to enough to it to have an opinion very much on that?
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
They really do. There's actually quite a large number of very well-informed and passionate hockey fans here, I think to the extent that would surprise some people. There are various different ways to measure this, of course, but we get tons of traffic on the blog, lots of Twitter traffic. There are lots of, like, if you go to the practice rink today, when there's 10 guys practicing, there'll be a hearty group of people there waiting for them to practice. And it's not even an organized practice. It's guys that pick up practice. On Saturday, for the World Junior Championship game in Ufa, Russia, other side of the world, the United States was playing Sweden at 8 o'clock in the morning. The bar opened for them at 7:30. You could not find a table at 8:30, right? Now, this is Columbus, Ohio. It's there. It's a sleeping hockey market right now. I don't think it's a dead hockey market. I think it's going to be a fantastic hockey market if they ever get to the point where the people can trust the product, where they can believe that they're going to be entertained, where they believe that people in charge know what they're doing. I think you'll see a market here similar to a San Jose like in California that's been in the shadow of the cities around it for a long time and is ready to emerge as a quote-unquote major league town. Now Columbus is playing Los Angeles, New York, Toronto, Montreal, not just other college towns. There's a sense that there's a lot of people here who are sort of ready to move beyond a town that's known mostly for college sports.
Brian Owen, when you did your survey, did you ask people about what aspects of the disagreement concerned them most, what they cared most about?
We really didn't. But if I could just add to the last comments, I did a little internet searching, and hockey in the U.S. is actually in pretty good shape for an emerging sport. There are, I think, there's 600 and some thousand young people involved in hockey in Canada. There's 500 and some thousand involved in it in the U.S. 50% of the players in the NHL are Canadian-born. 25% are American-born. The U.S. has won the Junior World Championship 3 years out of the last 10. There's a powerful potential for continued growth of hockey in the U.S. and particularly as it, you know, if it's focused and developed properly in markets like Columbus. I totally agree that there's good potential there.
Youth hockey in Columbus so has taken a hit.
In this year?
Yeah, okay. I don't know that. The numbers, there's quite a large number of kids playing, and I'm trying to verify these numbers because they're very difficult to, everyone has sort of a different...
Most of it's anecdotal.
Totally. But I've heard from a lot of people that St. Louis has a very large adult hockey league gathering, a number of people who take part in adult hockey, and Columbus is close and growing. There's lots of good signs. I think what can be said of the U.S. market and their interest in hockey right now is where hockey is it does well in a lot of places, and people are fans there. Minnesota is huge. The New York area, Boston, those areas have always been big. But it's also big in the areas where it has it. And you've seen Dallas has a huge youth group, a group of youth players coming up. Denver has a huge group. But what the difference between Canada and the U.S. right now is those markets they're pockets in the U.S. and they're not connected. The gap between Dallas and Denver, there aren't kids playing hockey in that gap. Mm-hmm. In those cities, there are. But Canada, it doesn't matter what province, what town you go to in the province, they're playing hockey.
Well, you can't have a rink outdoors in Dallas. I mean,
very true. You can have them indoors. You can have them indoors. Right. And Canada has them all over indoors. Right. I forget what the number is in Ontario, but the number of indoor ice rinks would astound you in Ontario. Columbus had one permanent ice rink until the Blue Jackets got there. Right. Now they have six or seven, so there's opportunity.
It's like one in every street corner in Canada?
Well, there's fewer and fewer outdoor rinks, but lots and lots of indoor rinks. While I mentioned 600,000 people playing hockey or associated with hockey in Canada and 500,000 in the U.S., I mean, you have to keep in mind that the density is, I mean, Canada's a tenth of the population of the U.S., so the density and level of interest is way, way higher.
Brian Owen, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Brian Owen, he's CEO and chairman of NRG Research Group. We'll have a link to if you want to learn more about the survey they did last month about the National Hockey League and support for it in Canada. Go to WOSU.org/allsides and check that out. Continuing on with me, Aaron Portsline for the Columbus Dispatch, and then coming up, another sports reporter from Canada. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
Those on the other side of the hiring table say the job market has improved. While Kazalia agrees the job market is beginning to rebound, she says salaries are not.
Employers are dealing with their own economic realities in terms of tightening the budgets a little bit. And so
hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
This is 89.7 NPR News. It's 32 degrees in downtown Columbus and a high of 37 today. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 26. Mostly sunny for Tuesday and a high of 44 degrees. Some clouds Tuesday night, a low of 33. Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Metropolitan Club, presenting their weekly forum. Wednesday at noon, it's the Blue Chip Economic Forecast, an up-to-the-minute report on Central Ohio's dynamic economy and the future of the region. More information at columbusmetroclub.org. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The NHL was just days away from a repeat performance of its axed 2004-2005 season when negotiators in the wee hours on Sunday came together on a new collective bargaining agreement, ending a 113-day lockout with a plan to guarantee peace for at least eight seasons. Still with us is Dispatch sports reporter Aaron Portsline. Joining us now from Toronto is James Myrtle. He's a reporter for the Globe and Mail. Welcome to the show, James.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
We were talking earlier about polls that show Canadians are largely indifferent to the lockout, or were indifferent to the lockout. Do you think that's a reflection of a long-term pattern? Was it brought about by the lockout itself? What do you make of those kinds of numbers?
Well, you know, people are just frustrated that this has happened so often in hockey. And I think people need to understand that in Canada, it's different than the U.S. in that the NHL is the game. It's not like there's Major League Baseball and the NFL and all these other sports. I mean, the NHL is a huge part of the professional sports landscape. And when it continually has lockouts like this, it creates a huge void in the sports mindset for fans here. And it's very, very frustrating. And that's why you see them this time around tuning out. You know, I think that a lot more fans were plugged in the last time there was a lockout because they agreed that the sport needed a salary cap. But just the frequency of this is what's happening and why it's frustrating people so much.
What is it about the culture of professional hockey that creates this kind of atmosphere where we have this problem so often? What do you make of it, James?
It's an economic problem in the league. I mean, it's a case of, in my opinion, they're in too many markets. They aren't strong enough to support NHL teams. And if this was a league that was in 22 or 24 cities and had a stronger base in Canada, I think it would be a lot healthier and probably wouldn't need to lock out as much as it does now. But they have a lot of struggling teams financially, and part of leveling that landscape is having a lockout and asking for concessions from the players in terms of revenues. So that's what we're seeing right now.
Right, because when you're talking about players and you're talking about team owners, Aaron Portsline, they're very different. There's huge variation on what they bring to the table.
Huge, yes. And one of the problems that seemed so smart at the time, their previous collective bargaining agreement, is they linked the salary cap to the revenue of the league. So if the revenue of the league grew, the amount of money that the players could make grew as well, which seemed like such a great idea. They also put a salary floor in place so that you would not have this great disparity between teams, so it would be more competitive. But what happened is and I don't know that anybody could foresee this to the extent that it happened, but the Torontos and Montreals, Vancouvers of the league made so much money, did so well, that they push the amount of revenue so high that the teams at the bottom, now the salary floor is above what the salary cap used to be. So it creates a stratospheric leap that the small market teams can't keep up with. The other thing that the NHL has not done to sort of keep the money flowing and keep itself self-supported is the level of revenue sharing in the NHL is far below the other sports. The NFL shares revenue at an enormous rate, where the top teams' money is circulating around to the poor teams. I know on paper it doesn't look like the right thing to do. Why should the teams that are so rich and so beneficial, why should they be giving money to the poor teams? But it helps sustain the league. It helps keep the ball moving here rather than and I look at this new CBA and I wonder if they've done enough to fix it yet again, where it's going to have to reset again in 8 years because they're not sharing revenue with the bottom.
What about what James Myrtle said? There's too many teams. They expanded too quickly, too fast, too widely.
I think there's a thought. I think you have to be careful with that sometimes. I don't know if 22, 24 is the right number. And maybe I'm defensive about this because the team that I cover in the city that I live in gets mentioned so often as one of the teams that could easily be cut out of the league, and I don't agree with that. But you know, the league needs to have teams to play. You need to have enough teams that you can support a schedule that is interesting to other to fans, where you're not playing the same teams with such regularity. Look where Chicago was just a few years ago. Nobody was going to the games. They were on the back page of the Sun-Times. Nobody cared about them. The owner passes away. Sun takes over. Kaboom. Blackhawks are all the rage in Chicago now. You'd never imagine. Now, no one talked about them being taken out of the league because it's Chicago. But look at Pittsburgh. The year Sidney Crosby was a rookie, Sidney Crosby, last in the league in attendance, dead last in attendance. You would never have thought, get rid of the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? But it almost happened. And markets change. I think over time, the one thing we've seen is markets change. I will say this, agreeing with James, there are some places that you wonder, the teams have won, they've been successful, there still doesn't seem to be a lot of interest there. Maybe it is time to move on. Phoenix, maybe Florida. But I just think if you put the right product on the ice, if you run your team the correct way, I think markets can change over time, and markets that one day seem unsustainable, soon thereafter could be crazy suggesting that they wouldn't be in the league.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. With me in the studio, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, sports reporter who covers the Columbus Blue Jackets and NHL hockey, and also James Myrtle, hockey reporter for the Globe and Mail in Toronto. James, you're up there in Canada where the most successful teams are. What about the revenue sharing idea? Is that, you know, Aaron mentioned that, well, he's biased. I mean, he admits he comes from a point of view of one of the losingest teams ever. You're coming from a different point of view, right?
Yeah, and not my personal perspective, mm-hmm. but just the perspective in general here in Canada is that, you know, generally the fans here don't want to support teams in Florida and Phoenix that aren't generating hardly any revenue. And they see in Canada a need to have more teams here. You know, I think that you look at the greater New York area and there are three NHL teams, and then you look at Southern Ontario where the Toronto Maple Leafs play and there's only one team. And that really doesn't make a lot of sense given the number of hockey fans here and the level of interest. I mean, I think that this region of Canada could easily support two or three teams.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that what you have to question is it because this is an American league that they don't have more teams in areas in Canada where they could support that? I mean, we'd be talking about if there was a second team in Toronto, that would be another team that would be paying into revenue sharing and helping out teams on the lower end. So yeah, they are increasing revenue sharing with the new deal. It's going to help some teams like Columbus. But I also think that there's a need for relocation and to look at where the different markets are right now.
What's it going to take to bring the fans back? You don't think there's going to be a problem up in Canada, James? People will fill the arenas again?
Oh, no, there won't be a problem at all. I mean, the season ticket base in all of the seven Canadian cities is huge. I mean, it's 90% of the arena no one canceled their season tickets, so everyone's going to be back. And, you know, I think there could be some impact in terms of merchandise and TV ratings, just because, as we talked about previously, I mean, there's some frustration here, but the buildings all across Canada are going to be full every night.
And in the United States, Aaron Portsline?
I think there's a much bigger challenge in the U.S. I think I certainly agree with James. James, I don't. There wasn't one NHL game played in Canada last year that wasn't sold out, right?
I think the Ottawa Senators have a big building, and they don't sell out every single game. But, I mean,
it's pretty rare.
The rinks are basically at 99.8% capacity.
It's crazy.
You know, other than Ottawa, a little bit under. Yeah. No, everyone else would sell out every game.
Yeah. I think the concerns here in the States, I think this is going to be a slower recovery than it was after 04, 05 for a few reasons. Sidney Crosby came into the NHL after the last lockout. He's the most marketable player. Some people love him. Some people hate him. Everybody knows him. The Winter Classic sprung up since the last lockout and became a huge,
very big disappointment for a lot of people this year.
Yeah, a huge boon to the league. People love watching that game, even people who aren't day-to-day hockey fans. The Canadian dollar rose up to the point where those franchises became much stronger, where people are now talking about putting a team back in Quebec City. They changed the rules of the game coming out of the lockout in 04-05, where the game became more offensive. They put the shootout in. Fans loved those things. And you saw it almost like the lockout never happened in 04-05. This time, I get the sense that people are a little more bitter, and I don't see that they've got those sort of benefits at their disposal this time. It's almost like the lout of a husband came home with roses last time, and he's coming home empty-handed now, just saying, just take me.
Is there anything in there to tempt, you know, fans?
Yeah, I mean, it's hockey,
just
right? And if
fans,
you love
right.
hockey, you're gonna you're going. It's a great sport. It's incredible live, and a lot of people realize this, and so they'll be there. But it's not like it. I don't get the sense that it's like it was last time, when you could argue it was even worse because they canceled the entire season. Now they're coming back. They're going to spare some portion of the season, probably 48 games. I just think it's going to be a harder climb. I think people are a little more bitter this time.
So they're expected to announce the dates for camps or opening days. What do we hear about that, James Myrtle?
Yeah, it sounds like they'll be back at training camp potentially by this weekend, and then it's going to be sort of a shotgun start to the season. Training camp will be about a week long, and then they're going to get going as soon as they can because, you know, the problem they're running into is that the season's going to stretch into, including the playoffs, is going to stretch into late June, and they need to try and make sure that the Stanley Cup's given out before July, so they have to get going as fast as possible.
Right.
And it sounds like they're...
Go ahead. That they're doing that.
Like they're going to, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to... Are they... It's 48 games. Would there be 48 games left for regular season anyway at this point? Is that how it works? Okay,
no,
so they're expanding.
Yeah, they'll be
the
fitting more
half.
Games in, for
okay.
sure. James, they can't hand the Stanley Cup out the day the free agency starts, can they?
Well, they're going to push free agency back. So, you know, it could be a case where Stanley Cup given out on June 30th and then free agency starts July 5th. It's going to be really, really close. I don't think there's any way they can avoid that.
And the draft somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Somewhere, yeah. It's a mess, but it's better than I think it's better for most places than not having any games at all, for sure.
One observer wrote that anyone who believes all the NHL has to do is come back and all will go back to as it was should think again. It's about damage control with these people, not about action on the ice. Now, of course, we've already talked about Canada, but so the Blue Jackets, could they come back and kick butt for the next 48 games and still not be able to bring them back?
I think the toughest part of that question is, could the Blue Jackets come back and kick butt for 48 games?
I'm sorry, fantasy world.
No.
Let me do the dream
yeah,
scenario.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at this club and think it could be competitive. It should be. Certainly, they should have been much better than they were last year. That was an abomination. You know, this market is in a tough spot right now. It's about trust and faith and belief. I think the most important offseason acquisition for this club, and James can address this as well, I would imagine, is John Davidson, who is a guy that is almost universally loved throughout hockey, a very respected voice, a guy who, when he says something, there's a high believability quotient with it. The people here have reached a point, excuse me, where there's never really been a lot of belief in the direction. There have been sporadic bursts here and there where they start to feel something's going to happen, but they need to know that this organization is in good hands. I think for the first time, the front office has the experience, the expertise. If you put John Davidson in there, the rest of the guys sort of slot to where they should be given their experience. I think John Davidson can be a real benefit to this club.
I've heard this before. James Myrtle, what's your point of view on it? We've been hearing
on Columbus.
Yeah,
I think the Blue Jackets will probably be in tough again this season. I mean, they're in a rebuild again, yet again. And you know what? I'm talking about the strength of the markets in Canada. Now there should be more teams in Canada and fewer in the U.S. I mean, I think Columbus is a pretty decent market that has unfortunately been given a very, very tough hand in that they've been so poorly managed. I mean, it's been since they came into the league in 2000, it's probably been one of the worst managed teams in NHL history over that long of a period. I mean, the lack of success that franchise has had should be embarrassing to the people that run the team. So are they struggling in Columbus? Yes. Are they losing money? Yes. But I don't think that's a function necessarily of the market, because we don't know how good the market is. You know, I've been there, I've been to games there, and I'm very impressed with the arena, with the area, with the knowledge of some of the fans. There's more and more competitive hockey being played in Ohio and more good players coming out of there. There's an opportunity, I think, for the team to be successful financially and on the ice, but it's just unfortunate how poorly that the team has been run.
Yeah. Well, and the sad thing is they've lost a generation of fans. I mean, if you think you can't go 12 years like this, the kids that were 4 and 5 years old when they got here are now 16, 17 years old, and they're not attached to this team. So not any of them are. Some are, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they've left behind that generation. It's almost like they're still starting again to try to create that. And James is right. It's been incredibly. We've detailed it on a daily basis now for 12 years. Some of the stuff that has happened here is incredible. They've had bad luck, but they've also had terrible management.
James Myrtle, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, take care. James Myrtle, he's a hockey reporter for the Globe and Mail in Toronto. Coming back with me, Aaron Portsline, sports reporter, hockey reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. We're going to go over some of those points in the tentative agreement and figure out what's what. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear revelations from well-known actors, like Zach Galifianakis on the story behind his last name.
It's actually shortened, Terry. My real last name is Galifianakisberg. that's an exclusive for your show.
Fresh Air, bringing you some of the biggest names in American culture and some of the most difficult to pronounce. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on today's Fresh Air. A new season of Downton Abbey is here, with the mother-in-law from America coming to stay. On the next Fresh Air, a discussion with the show's creator, writer, and producer, Julian Fellows. Join us for Fresh Air at noon. WOSU is supported by the McCoy Center for the Arts. National Geographic tornado hunter Tim Samaras will detail his harrowing job with scientific tidbits and footage from his adventures in the field. A show for all ages, Sunday, January 13th, at the McCoy Center in New Albany. More at mccoycenter.org. And remember, a basic membership has some great benefits. You'll receive a one-year subscription to Newsweek Online, our program guide, Airfare Magazine, the FYIE newsletter, and a grocery tote. A basic membership starts at just $60. Visit WOSU.org, and thanks for your support. 32 degrees with a high of 37 today. Clear skies tonight, a low of 26. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The NHL lockout has ended after a marathon negotiating session led by federal mediator Scott Beckenbaugh. So let's get down to the deal. Still with us is Aaron Portsline. He's a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, first of all, I wanted to get your impression of the federal mediator, Scott Beckenbaugh. He's getting lots of kudos for his efforts.
And he should.
What magic did he bring?
You know, well, last Wednesday, the collective bargaining talks appeared to be building towards something. And then what has always happened between these two sides, the trust completely explodes. The players see something in one of the NHL proposals that they had not been made aware of. They thought the league was trying to sneak something past them. Kaboom, everything falls apart. And now the season's in real jeopardy. Beckenbaugh comes in.
But who's...
Both sides agreed to a mediator.
Okay.
U.S. federal mediator.
Yeah.
And he really took on the job of almost a bomb diffuser, if you will. Just little, be very careful.
He was literally physically taking...
Literally walking three New York City blocks back and forth. I know what Gary said about you, but he doesn't really think that way, right? And you go back to the other side, and they'd work through here's what we agree on, what would you think about this? And gets them over the course of about 48, 72 hours to the point where they could actually be in the room together. Huge progress just in that in and of itself. Gets them in the room together at beginning 11 a.m. Saturday, and then they work literally 16 hours, well in almost 5 o'clock in the morning, until they are able at that point to stand up, shake hands, and say, there's your deal. Sunday morning, almost 5 o'clock in the morning.
Is Beckenbaugh a hockey guy?
No, I mean, I don't. He may or may not be a hockey fan. I don't know. He did work with them in 2004-05 unsuccessfully to save that one. But so he has, and he deals with these things a lot, just not in professional sports, to my knowledge.
Okay, so the NHL locked out players on September 15th, claiming it could not continue paying them 57% of hockey-related revenues as it did last season under the previous labor deal. Its first offer was to give them 43% of revenues, which really ticked off the players. And that might have prolonged the negotiating process right off the bat. They ended up with a 50-50 split. That's a big deal.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's a huge gain for the owners, for sure. It's a big step back for players. It's a 50-50 split of the money that's defined as hockey-related revenue. So there's money that owners make that may or may not fall into that category, but now is an exact 50-50 split of the hockey-related revenue.
How does that compare to other professional sports?
That's a good question. The NBA, I believe, is around 48%, or maybe it's a gradual decline to 48%. To be considered there is that the NBA has about half as many players. They have 12 players per team as opposed to 25, so mm-hmm. or 23, 25. So that's a big difference. The NFL is such a different animal because it's so huge. They make so much money in TV money. But there's also so many players, 53 aside, 45 active. So the finances in that way are sort of incongruous because there's such different business models for each of them.
And then the length of the labor agreement was a comfort to many, 8 years.
Yeah.
At least 8 years. Ideally
10,
yeah. But 8 years. What would trigger the 8 year?
Well, it's definitely going to be 8 years.
Okay.
At the end of the eighth year and... probably at some point during that eighth year, there's a mutual opt for either team, for both sides, rather, or if they both agree, let's extend it to 10 years, then it extends to 10 years. The previous CBA, which ended up being 7 years, was originally written as a 5-year CBA. It could have been extended twice and was. So it's definitely going to be 8 years. There will definitely be labor peace through 2019 and 20. But it could go as long as through 2021 and 22.
And some people are suspicious. Are they going to raise the prices to see a game to make up the loss of the lockout? Can they do that? Will they do that? What are your expectations?
I think every market's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
I mean, Canada can do that.
Because there's fewer games. People want to see it. They could capitalize
sure.
on that.
Yeah, they could. I mean, I think
but...
they're going to be lucky to get people in the house as it is in a lot of markets. I can't imagine them doing that in Columbus. I have not heard that. Most of these teams set ticket prices already before the lockout engaged, so those ticket prices will be in place for this year. It would take a lot of, I'm not sure what the right word is or if it could be said on the air here, a lot of that to raise ticket prices going into next year after you've done what you've done
in
to
Columbus.
Fans this year.
Anywhere. Okay.
But I don't know if you couldn't get away with it in Columbus for sure. It would take a lot of that. to do it anywhere, my opinion.
It's a rich man's game as it is. I mean,
yeah,
it's
pro
an
sports
expensive,
is a rich,
yes.
It's so expensive. Pro sports is.
The pretzels.
Yeah.
$6.
And it's really interesting to me how pro sports has changed. Like, the standard now is, are you sold out? And if you're not sold out, nobody cares about it, right? That was never the standard before. The first four Super Bowls were not sold out, right? That's unconscionable now. Tickets are $1,000 a piece or whatever. Pro sports has gotten so out of whack. I love it. I love sports. I love the drama it creates. But it really has gotten so crazy in this country. So has college sports. College sports has become almost pro sports in a lot of ways. But it's not going to change until the people who are talking about how crazy it is aren't in line to buy four tickets, right? I mean, it's like, this is outrageous. I'll take four.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it's
four
not
beers
outrageous.
And
exactly.
Four, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the truth is, if Columbus becomes a legitimate hockey team and a competitive hockey team, Nationwide Arena will, and they win playoff series and they go deep in the playoffs, the place will be packed and people will be happy to be there.
You know, when there is a lockout like this, there's no revenue coming in, but what do the owners do to satisfy their costs?
Well, they don't.
Are
pay,
they not?
Pay,
they're not paying.
They're
the
not
players.
Paying the players.
Okay.
So there's, and that's.
And they use most of them, or all of them, don't own the arenas anymore. Or,
yeah, they're mostly built for them,
mm-hmm.
right? In a case like Columbus, and we're not privy to their books. It's a private company, but they're not paying the players, so they're not losing money like they did last year. In some cases, teams are better off not playing when it gets that out of whack. Columbus really was the Blue Jackets, I say, were the poster child's poster children for really screwing things up last year. Their payroll was top five in the league, which is hard to imagine, well over $60 million, and they finished 30th, I mean, last in the entire league.
And every year over the last 12 years, their revenue's gone from...
Yeah, well,
attendance and
they've had years where they were much more competitive. One year they made the playoffs, mm-hmm. where they didn't spend nearly that amount of money. So the money that they lost would have been, you know, much smaller than this year. I'm led to believe they 20 million is probably a safe bet for what they lost last year. Maybe 25. A market like this cannot justify spending well over $60 million without winning. And winning and winning. And to bottom out to 30th in the league, that's an absolutely disastrous season.
The 1994-95 season, which was shortened to 48 games, I guess, by a league-imposed lockout, it was limited to intra-conference play. The idea was to emphasize geographic and, I guess, conference rivalries. Is that something that you expect this time around, too?
Yes.
Okay.
That all games will be played within the conference, which does not help the Blue Jackets at all.
We didn't get to the whole issue of rearranging the conference lineups.
Yeah, they're the easternmost Western Conference team.
For television. It's bad for everything.
So many games start 9:30 or 10:30 at night. Kids aren't watching at that hour, most of them. That's been a challenge. And this year, this 48-game sprint here, it's going to be tough. They're going to play one team in their time zone, which is Detroit. They'll play them a few times, probably in Detroit. Other than that, every road game they play will be out of the time zone.
So what about, I'm looking for, I wanted to ask you about that lineup and the how things are aligned. No teams will switch conferences this season,
correct.
The NHL said, but changes will likely come before next season.
Yeah.
Are they going to make this easier on the Blue Jackets?
Well, there's only so much they can do.
Right. What can they?
Unless they have a different number in one conference as opposed to the other. They've just got too many teams on the eastern side of the country. The big desire is to get Winnipeg out of the Southeast Division, which if you look at the map and you see where Winnipeg is.
That doesn't make
any
sense.
No, but it did because they were Atlanta, and Atlanta moved to Winnipeg.
Oh, okay.
So they moved. The team moved to Winnipeg. They stayed in the Southeast Division. They've got to get them out of there. So they're going to, the dream for Columbus was that they would move west and Columbus would go east. It doesn't look like it's going to be quite that simple. Especially if, as James Myrtle pointed out earlier, a second team comes into the Toronto area,
mm-hmm.
perhaps another team comes into Quebec, which is dying for a hockey team above Montreal up in Quebec City. That's two more teams in the East. I think Columbus had better embrace its plot where it is. You know, there was a realignment plan to put them to break the league into four divisions rather than the current six, and then play more games within those groupings. So Columbus would be where they're at now with St. Louis, Detroit, Nashville. Who am I missing? St. Louis, Detroit, Nashville. They would add Minnesota. They would add Dallas. Chicago was the other team.
Mm-hmm.
And so that cluster of team, they would play within each other more. But Dallas to Columbus is not an easy trip. But it does spare them the jaunts out west.
We have a tweet from Jason. He said, I wish the Blue Jackets played the Pittsburgh Penguins more often. I would go to see that. That just makes so much sense.
It does. They're right there. But if Columbus...
And there are a lot of people from there who live here.
But if they were in the east, that they email would be from a Detroit Red Wings fan saying, I want them to play Detroit.
Yeah.
Right? They're in a difficult spot. I mean, the I think it's baseball that had more teams in the National League as opposed to the American League for a while. The NHL could do that, but then you get into imbalance heading into the playoffs. It's not perfectly fair to take the top eight from a conference of 18 teams as opposed to the top eight from a conference of 14. Doesn't quite work.
We still have a few more minutes left with Aaron Portsline, hockey reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. If you want to get a call in, do it now, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can tweet us, as did Jason, at WOSU All Sides, or check out the Facebook page and post it there. We've talked about the salary caps. We've talked about the salary floor, the contract length, 8 years, revenue sharing, $200 million in revenue sharing with an annual $60 million rescue fund to be used at league's discretion for struggling franchises.
Yeah.
Would that include the Columbus Blue Jackets?
It could. Each year that will be reevaluated, which situation is the most urgent in need of help. Columbus certainly would have probably qualified for that this year, previous years. What's interesting about revenue sharing now is, yes, there's more money in the revenue sharing pot. It's gone from $150 million to $200 million. But there are also more teams eligible for it because the league has taken away the restriction of teams in large TV markets. Heretofore, they've not been able to qualify for revenue sharing funds. Now they are. So Anaheim, which is in the LA, the shadows of LA, they can qualify. The New York Islanders, who play on Long Island, because they were in the New York metro area, they did not qualify before. Now they do. So I haven't seen the CBA yet. It hasn't been ratified. But one of the things I really want to look at is how revenue sharing is going to look to work, because that has a direct impact on the Blue Jackets and a few other small market teams.
Two amnesty contract buyouts before 2013-14 season at two-thirds the remaining contract. The money counts toward the player share of the revenue sharing or hockey-related revenue, but not toward the individual club's salary cap.
Correct. This is put in there for the teams to be able to clear the books of contracts that they don't like. They can use two of them this year. They can use one this offseason, one next offseason. I don't think the Blue Jackets are going to use those at all. Something could change, of course, but it allows teams to get bad contracts off their books. The players are okay with it because they do get two-thirds of the buyout. It does count against the percentage of hockey-related revenue that they get. But it also does not count against the salary cap of the teams, so now they're free to spend more money.
Let's grab some calls real quick. Timothy in Whitehall, you're on the air. Timothy, welcome to the show.
Yes, I love your articles in your Dispatch. They're outstanding, but I got one question. How come they just don't let all the teams this year qualify for the playoffs?
Because they would go on for a year?
Yeah, that's understandable. But the best of three, and the fans will come out and be more revenue for the owners.
You don't want to make the playoffs that way, do you? I suppose.
For one season.
Just once.
Right. They've made it once. No, I mean, they have to justify the need for a season. They have talked about expanding the playoffs, though. I don't know how I feel about that. It's more than half of the league gets in as it is. I think you need to be careful not to water it down, make it mean something. But
Brett in Columbus, you're on the air with Aaron Portsline. Welcome.
Well, thank you. My question is for us long, diehard Blue Jackets fan. I know we have some new leadership. What do you see in our farm system? What do you see in the lineup? Do we have some things on the horizon we can be hopeful for?
Yes, there's actually quite a few players that should give hope. The one kid is going to be brought to training camp. He just finished the World Juniors. Boone Jenner is going to. I don't know if he's going to score in the NHL. But he's definitely going to be a very impactful player. That is his reputation. Size, extremely hard worker, almost to the point where he has to be dialed down a bit, which would be a nice change. Ryan Murray is out for this season with a shoulder injury, but lots of people love him. Ryan Johansson is a bright prospect. Cam Atkinson, Tim Erickson. They need to really get this right with prospects, but bringing them along correctly, but there are quite a few players there to be excited about.
John in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. I have a question regarding the timing of the lockout and how it might generate some interest if the Blue Jackets would be able to get off to a favorable start to the year, with Ohio State finishing up in football extremely well and basketball sliding. If the Blue Jackets started off well, would the fans come around and focus maybe a little more directly than anticipated originally?
Yeah, I think it can certainly help. I typically the way this works, though, is when a team really performs well, they see the ticket boost the following season or late. It takes a while for people to trust. They need to rebuild some trust here. I think it's a longer process than just a 48-game season, but it certainly doesn't help if Ohio State struggles, and it doesn't hurt, rather, if Ohio State struggles in basketball. It frees that money up.
Thank you, John, for that call. What about the impact on college hockey? Have you seen an uptick on that?
I don't have the attendance figures in front of me, but I don't. From the last I heard, that there was not a drastic increase in Ohio State's attendance because of the lockout. Previous caller brought it up, though. Typically, Ohio State attendance tends to grow when football's done, depending upon what basketball does. I know Ohio State has a very good hockey program. There's a lot of loyal fans, but I don't think they've seen a dramatic increase.
Aaron Portsline, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Ian. Pleasure.
Aaron Portsline, he's a sports reporter, covers hockey for the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks to the All-Side staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Corinne Gleckler, production assistants Karim Shaban, Rose Joe, and Leticia Wiggins, and with video production by Rich Karsmiski and Amber Karsmiski. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.